ஓம் நம சிவாய. டியர் லிசனர்ஸ் ஆஃப் சைவம் .org, தி நெக்ஸ்ட் ப்ரோக்ராம் இஸ் ஸ்பிரிச்சுவல் டிஸ்கோர்ஸ். இன் திஸ் யூ ஆர் அபவுட் டு லிசன் கவாய் ஹிந்து லெக்சர்ஸ். த டைட்டில்ஸ் ஆர் எக்ஸ்பிரசிங் அவர் சோல், மோக்ஷா, அண்ட் தென் யூத் செமினார் பிரசன்டட் பை ஸ்ரீ சிவாய போதிநாத வேலாயுத சுவாமி. தேங்க்யூ. ஓம் நம சிவாய.
Today's Master Course lesson is interesting in terms of what it's combined. As you know, Dancing with Shiva repeats a few times because it's short. So we go through the Dancing with Shiva lessons multiple times while we're going through the Living with Shiva and Merging with Shiva just one time. So you never know how Dancing with Shiva will combine with Living with Shiva and Merging with Shiva unless you, you know, went through it once. So today, Dancing with Shiva is all about the soul body, and Merging with Shiva is all about the soul body. Both, you know, different statements, but reinforcing one another so powerfully. I was very surprised. I think you'll all enjoy it if you haven't read it yet. So I couldn't help but think about the soul body after I read that this morning. I said, gee, I have to say something about the soul body in the talk this morning, because it's really in the message of the day somehow, and it's so powerfully reinforced. So I think that the soul body gives us an attitude toward life that's very important, both regarding ourselves and others. As you know, when it comes to President Bush and his perception of evil, it differs from our theology. He sees evil in certain people. You know, that person is evil. Whereas I'm good, that person is evil. So it creates this dualistic sense of the world, this conflict sense regarding the world that some people are evil and some people are good. So I like our perspective much better. Everyone's good intrinsically. It's just that some people express that good and others don't. But it's in there. Everyone's good. So it's, to me, it's more hopeful. The fact that the good is in there, just for some reason it's not coming out at this particular point in time, but it will eventually. So all people are intrinsically good. You kind of relax about the world in a different way. When you see it in that sense, it takes out the sense of conflict, this opposition. When we see everyone as a soul, it also helps us understand what they would need to do to make further spiritual progress, what lessons they would need to learn from the experiences they're going through in order to move up to a higher level of consciousness in a future life to express more refined qualities. And the concept of the soul, when we apply it to ourselves, is even more relaxing because we say, gee, I'm a divine being. This is pretty good. Any sense of inferiority, any sense of serious flaws that we may have picked up along the way goes away. It's not our essential being that has those flaws, it's just our outer nature. We're a spiritual being, a divine being that learns through experience. No matter what experiences we've gone through, we're still a divine being. It doesn't touch us spiritually. We're a spiritual person, which we need that sense to move forward. The fact that we're a spiritual person gives us the strength, gives us the motivation to move forward spiritually. If we don't have that, where's our direction in life come from? It comes from external motivation, which comes and goes. If our external motivation is money, and we lose our money, our life can be pretty meaningless. our external motivation is to have a big house and the hurricane blows it down, and we weren't properly insured, we can get pretty discouraged. So having a spiritual identity helps us give a spiritual meaning to life, and the soul body can't go away. We can't lose it in a hurricane. We can't lose it when the stock market goes down. We can't lose it by mistake. It's a permanent possession. It is us. Can't give it away. It's us. We are that. So it's our permanent reality, which is worth refining and refining from life to life. Permanent possession. So those are just some thoughts. I think you'll all enjoy, if you haven't already, reading these two lessons on the soul body, and I'm sure it will inspire additional thoughts in all of you. Have a wonderful day. Om Namah Shivaya. Our first one-day youth Master Course seminar was just completed in Klang yesterday. Was the inspiration of two young men who were here on task force, who we all know, Shivaneshwaran and Arvind Raj. They thought about it when they were here and worked with a number of the monks on preparing material, took it back and did it. So a lot of the younger members there helped them and really enjoyed it. And reached out to some new people who afterwards signed up to study the Master Course. So it worked. Introduction to the Master Course actually produced Master Course students. So part of it was they were supposed to call me, and I had a little talk, and we ran into technical difficulties. And so a couple of hours after they were supposed to talk, they still hadn't called, so I had to do something else. So I wrote down the talk, and Shyamagana Swami gave it, just a very simple 5-minute or so inspirational message. First part was valuable. Why is the study of Hinduism valuable in terms of how a young person would look at it? What's the importance of studying Hinduism? So the idea was that the idea is that knowing about Hinduism allows us to contact God Shiva, Lord Muruga, Lord Ganesha, and receive their blessings in a powerful way and have them influence and uplift our life. Knowledge of Hinduism also teaches us to contact our inner self, the peaceful, intuitive, spiritual soul nature, and have that influence our life as well. So we're receiving blessings and inspiration two directions, from the inside and from the outside. We're surrounded by it, so to speak, when it works right. And what does all this do? Well, it gives us a happier life, a more peaceful life, a more balanced life, a more successful life, and a more refined life than we would otherwise have. So this is valuable. Hinduism is valuable in that way. It gives us all of these improvements in our life. Second message was practical. Understanding Hindu principles, karma, dharma, reincarnation, isn't enough. We have to also learn how to apply them to our lives so that we bring these teachings into our daily life in an effective way. And that's, of course, a lot of the emphasis of the Master Course Trilogy, and it's one of Gurudeva's siddhis, shall we say, is to bring it all down to earth. Make the most abstract principle something practical, something we can do in our daily life. And then we ended with a little story on karma and how karma, though often thought of as unchangeable, can actually be changed. Our famous September 11th story of one of the planes crashed into the Pentagon, And the original count of the number of people dead was one high because one person was double counted. The plane hit his office in the Pentagon as well as he was on the plane. So they counted him twice. So it shows that somehow he wasn't able to break out of that karma. Even though he wasn't in his office, he was in the plane. Amazing. The second story is, of course, the Patel family that came here. It's a large group, and one of the groups was a family, the husband of which works in the World Trade Center. And other members of his family finally talked him into coming on a pilgrimage to Shiva's feet. So he decided to come, and of course the plane plowed into the World Trade Center right where his office was, where he normally is every day at 9 o'clock. So because of his decision to be open to the grace of Lord Shiva and come on pilgrimage, he wasn't there when he's always there. So it showed that religious inspiration, religious influence can change the timing of events in our lives and change our karma in that way. So those were the three little ideas to give some inspiration to that seminar. And we're very happy that it took place. And they're starting small. I believe they only had 20. They restricted it to a group of 20 till they have more experience. And then they plan to expand it and, of course, repeat it often. So that'll be on satellite news whenever we get a full write-up with pictures probably coming in. We get requests to send letters for various activities at Hindu temples. Usually they put them in a printed souvenir. So this one just went out to New Zealand. New Zealand Tirumurugan Temple Society, on the occasion of the temple's Mahakumbhabhishekam. So this is a group in New Zealand that only formed in January of 2000. And I looked in the file, and there was a letter from Gurudeva on January 2000 congratulating them on forming. So here we are just a little over 2 years later writing the letter on their Kumbhabhishekam. So one of the reasons is they bought an existing building. That always speeds you up. Make a temple out of granite, that'll slow you down. But they bought an existing building and installed deities in it. So we congratulated them and gave them Gurudeva's standard statement. Subramanya Swami often stressed in his talks and writings that it is through temples the great gods are able to contact and inspire us to improve our lives, to see God everywhere, to seek love and harmony in all situations, starting in our home, and then to all we meet. As we become more stable in this harmonious relationship, we are inspired to bring forth the culture, to share what we have, so it may be passed on to the next generation. So that was Gurudeva's standard thought on the importance of temples, that in a Hindu diaspora or when Hindus exist in countries that don't have temples, if you don't have temples, the culture will eventually fade away. Culture isn't perpetuated from one person to another. It comes out of the temple. The temple has a special vibration which uplifts us all, refines us all, reminds us of the culture, and therefore is central to perpetuating it. And the second idea, Gurudeva always included, was, of course, the challenge is for the elders to pass on to the next generation their deep understanding of Hindu philosophy, the uniqueness of the temple, and the traditional ways of worshipping Tirumurugan and receiving his potent blessings. All of us here at Kauai Adinam and our magazine Hinduism Today are always available to help in any way we can to support your efforts. So this is a challenge worldwide, and we've done a few things to help, but it's an ongoing problem in that many temples, societies don't have effective ways of passing on the teachings to the next generation. You visit there, you give a talk, and where all the kids are outside running around playing. So if they're outside running around playing when you're there, you know, it means they're always outside running around playing. So it means they're not being taught about the temple. If you don't understand how the temple works, then of course you grow up not valuing it and not integrating it into your life. So this is an ongoing challenge in terms of dialogue with Hindu leaders at various temples. Gurudeva's encouraging education to take place at the temples that are established. It's something we can focus more of our publications on to be of service. We recently produced a nice flyer on, it's called Hinduism's Code of Conduct, which is the yamas and niyamas, 10 yamas, 10 niyamas, and we have 24,000 or something, 48,000 of them. That'll last a while. We print them along with the cover. So this one was two up, and we printed 24,000 of Gurudeva's commemorative issue. So we have 48,000, and 5,000 of which are going to Trinidad, is that right? We have some Livewire ministers, the Raghunandan family, Livewire missionaries in Trinidad who are very eager to distribute Gurudeva's teachings there. And in fact, they're on TACO with their Mystic Mouse publication, showing they have quite a support team there distributing the publication. So they were very keen on the yamas and niyamas, so it even has their telephone contact on it, Trinidad, and has their phone number. 5,000 are going to them, and then we have 43,000 more to distribute around the world. And it's a very good publication for this kind of effort of teaching children, because it summarizes very succinctly in the English and Sanskrit words these 20 principles and then explains them. Plus, we have the greatest backup possible. We have Gurudeva's very inspired elucidations of each of the yamas and niyamas in Living with Shiva as a backup textbook for any teacher. And we have the Sri Shiva Yogaswami Sivathondan Center, Scarborough, Ontario, having a Mahasamadhi Puja of Yogaswami on March 24th. So we sent a message there. Reflecting on the Mahasamadhi of Sri Shiva Yogaswami, his great spiritual attainment comes to mind, which was achieved through many years of strict dhyana, sadhana, and tapas. Standard, right? Now it takes a twist. You have to listen to the twist here. His attainment is also our potential, our spiritual destiny to be reached at some point in this or a future life. Let his great attainment re-inspire us to devote more time to our own spiritual practices. So that's how Gurudeva looked at it, and it, you know, beautifully said in the Clear White Light chapter in Merging with Shiva, we go into the light and sometimes we see the face of a great master. And it goes on to say, who shows us our own spiritual potential? Well, it doesn't stop by seeing someone great and here we are. It says, no. You will be that eventually. Let it inspire you to become your spiritual potential. Our soul is what moves from one life to the next through the process of reincarnation. We cannot take our material wealth with us, only our soul. Thus the soul's development, its maturation, is the only permanent part of life. Yogaswami's sagely advice on these matters is timeless. Three quotes. You cannot improve others or the world. Improve yourself. So sometimes it's easier to think about improving others or worrying about making the world a better, safer place, and because that's easier to do than to improve ourselves. Because to improve ourselves, we have to acknowledge that we're not perfect, that we have flaws, that we have areas that we can improve, and then we have to try and actually do it. Next quote. Little by little, control the mind, direct the mind towards God, and practice meditation. And finally, you must know yourself by yourself. There is nothing else to be known. So, some thoughts from Yogaswami. Today's Dancing with Shiva lesson was particularly appropriate for the Moksha Ratao because defines moksha. The destiny of all souls is moksha, liberation from rebirth on the physical plane. Our soul then continues evolving in the Antarloka and Shivaloka and finally merges with Shiva, like water returning to the sea. The Bhashya starts out, moksha comes when earthly karma has been resolved, dharma well performed, and God fully realized. Each soul must have performed well through many lives, the varna dharmas or four castes, and lived through life's varied experiences in order to not be pulled back to physical birth by a deed left undone. So that's what I wanted to focus on. This contains the idea of having performed well. The four dharmas of the caste and lives through life's varied experiences. In other words, there's a lot of experiences we have to go through. We all go through them in different lives, and that's why people are so different. We're not all in the same chapter at the same time, so to speak, experiencing different kinds of lives at different points. So it gives a great variety. But the idea is we go through all these experiences. As it says here, we go through the experiences of the four castes. And that's part of what is necessary to do on life, in life. In other words, just because someone is spiritually motivated doesn't mean they can go sit in a cave and achieve moksha. They may not have had enough of the experiences of life for that to work. Sitting in a cave is appropriate in two situations. One is for someone who is on the sannyasa dharma, a monk. But even then, he can't necessarily sit in a cave 24 hours a day and benefit from it. And it's appropriate for everyone in the latter stages of life, the sannyasa ashrama, when it's natural to become more spiritual and drop off other duties. But otherwise, it doesn't work. We're just postponing experiences we need to go through. For a single person who's not on the sannyasa dharma, just to go sit in seclusion doesn't necessarily benefit them that much. It might be better for them to follow the traditional grahastha dharma and go through the experiences of life, choosing the swadharma, which is natural to them. In that way, they might make much more spiritual progress than they would otherwise. So that's the point that Gurudeva is making here, that just because we're interested in moksha doesn't mean we can skip certain experiences in life. We need to go through life and experience what the planet has to offer in order not to be pulled back to it. So that's a very nice thought. Just to touch briefly on one more subject. Yesterday's and today's lessons in terms of merging with Shiva is like a manual on how to realize the self, in case you haven't noticed it. It's much more specific. I say manual in the sense that it's like step by step. Okay, well, first you do this, then you do this. Don't do that. And don't do this, but then you do that, and then you do this. You know, as a sense of a manual. So it inspired me, so I think I'll work up a talk on it for next phase or soon after. But just wanted to read a little bit about it, kind of get all of our minds into it. So it's talking about inner light, seeing the inner light at the top of the head. And it says something very interesting. It says to hold the light in a 3-inch diameter because there will be a tendency for the light to fill up his whole head. He will feel very blissful. And then what does Gurudeva say? We don't want that to happen. You wouldn't expect that, would you? We don't want that to happen. Otherwise, he's starting to become emotional and a little bit externalized instead of detached and poised. So we don't want him to get too blissful. We do not want the emotions of the lower mind to get out of control simply because he found a bright light in his head. Then it explains what to do next. Then there's a nice statement which helps explain what inner light is. The wise sannyasin will not allow himself to get emotional about the inner light because seeing this light indicates that he is only beginning to come into his superconsciousness. So this is like a first experience in superconsciousness, not the depth of superconsciousness. Then Gurudev explains why. The light really is the friction of the superconscious mind against the conscious and subconscious mind. If that one wasn't clear, try this one. In my way of looking at it, it is an electrical friction. The odic forces and the actinic forces merging causes light and sound. So, in other words, if you're seeing light, it means you're still involved in some of the odic forces, otherwise you wouldn't see light. If you were purely in the actinic or superconscious force, you wouldn't see any light. So it's the friction between the actinic and the odic force that causes like a spark. So when you go more into the actinic, you go beyond light, which it starts to talk about. Or if you come more into the odic, you can't see the light. So it gives a nice balance. So I think we'll save the rest of that for a nice talk on how it all works. It's beautifully written up, and certainly not aware of anything else that Gurudev has written which pins it down into such a step-by-step, manual-like write-up of how to realize Parashiva. So we enjoy that. It's wonderful for the Moksha Ratao, and of course, the way we study the trilogy, we started on Tamil New Year. So the Moksha Ratao is the third of the three Ratao's. So therefore, we're going through the end of merging with Shiva in the Moksha Ratao. And, of course, that's the deepest part. That's where all of this is about realization, is right in the last 18 chapters.